Hello everyone and welcome to the CMO Stories podcast episode 41. My name is Yuri Bilast and I'm your podcast host. And today we have a guest from Australia. Hello Matt, how are you doing?
Wonderful, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. And for the listeners, you won't know this, but it's really early at this moment in Australia. It's 4:30 in the morning there when we are recording this. It's already late in Belgium. So Matt is not like from the 5 a.m. club, but the 4 a.m. club. So that's really amazing. Matt, let me give an introduction for our listeners. So who is Matt Boyle, ladies and gentlemen? Well, Matt is the CEO and founder of Online to Offline, O2O, and that's a company dedicated to helping businesses increase their lead generation activities, optimize their sales conversions, and maximize their profits. But that's only a part of the story, because O2O is committed to using entrepreneurship and job creation as a vehicle to end poverty-driven exploitation and sexual slavery by opening centers in developing countries and using them as community hubs. Matt lives on Sunshine Coast in Australia with his wife and his six kids, where he spends his spare time training for strongman competitions. So it seems that you're really a lot on your plate, Matt. So I can imagine that you get out of bed early. So, Matt, of course, I have invited you because of all these different things, but one of the things is the lead generation. And then one of the questions I want to ask is, why should businesses be focused on making an impact before making a profit? I know that's one of the things that you say.
Look, so my personal story, as I've made the shift, because I haven't always wanted to help other people. My business started off, as everyone's is I want to make profit, I want time, it's all about me. Mm-hmm. It's all about me and my family and all that stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. But that, for me, left this horrible kind of unfulfilled void. And when I went over to Thailand and I experienced what's happening over there, I went, oh, I have to make a difference. And I started off that journey of going, I'm just going to go start a charity and I want to help, and just gone completely down that other path of, you know, the polar opposite of entrepreneurship and stuff. And I found I couldn't actually make an impact that way. So I kind of eventually sat in the middle between the sort of two spheres of gone, if I can build a framework that focuses on making other people's lives better, then, and the only way I can fund that is by having a successful business. Mm-hmm. I created this framework where the more people I help, the more profit I make. And the more profit I make, the more people I help. And, you know, it's actually this spiral now that my business has grown exponentially the last few years.
Right.
Because it's focused on making an impact first, and the only vehicle to make the impact is to actually grow the business and grow the revenue. So it's this spiral where it's actually better for business. In my experience, it's much better for business to actually go, I want to help people first, make profit second.
Yeah, I think for the long term of your business, it's better. If you start a business and you just, are looking for the money, I don't think that's a good basis. You should really try to help people with a problem. And then, of course, I think the profit will follow. You talk about your trip to Thailand. I think that has impacted you in different ways, perhaps not only with the view on your business, but tell us a bit about that.
Look, it did. So I got the opportunity to go over to Thailand with another Aussie guy that was working to rescue women out of brothels and out of this sexual exploitation and kids. And I got to see this depravity firsthand, and this wasn't one of these kind of guided tours. This was front lines, kicking doors in, seeing everything. And at the time my kids were fairly young and I couldn't take my kids' faces off these poor kids that were getting trafficked around and, sold into slavery and doing all these kind of unimaginable acts. And it was just, gut-wrenching. But as I started to talk to these people that had been caught in this life and talk to the families and talk to these women that were in this and was able to kind of just put all of my judgment aside about what prostitution is and, all of that kind of stuff and just go, I just want to talk to the person. The stories were all the same, that none of them wanted to be there. Mm-hmm. Every one of them got caught up in this life because they needed money. You know, there was different stories, but they all kind of, you know, went to the same tune as far as we needed money, so we took a job that we know we shouldn't have, but we needed the money. Or we took a job that we thought was something else and actually turned into this. Or yeah. We borrowed money from someone and now we can't pay it back. Or my parents needed money, so they sold me to this person. Like, you know, and that's just coming from Australia, which is just pure privilege and, you know, like such a lucky country. It was massively eye-opening and it was just going, I can't believe people actually have to make those yeah. choices and then they get caught in that. And it was just, you know, it was just absolutely kind of heartbreaking to see all of that happen. But there was one moment where there was a woman we rescued. She was 19 and, you know, the story was pretty hardcore where for a period of time we thought she'd been murdered.
Whoa.
And but she hadn't. And we rescued her and that involved paying off her debts to this trafficker that owned her, and I had to go and pretend that I wanted her to be my girlfriend and wanted to buy her from this guy, just like you go buy a TV from the, you know, a TV from the store. And, you know, that cost $1,500.
Hmm.
What it cost to buy her freedom, that they were going to kill her over $1,500. And this, so, you know, for me, that's like nothing. Like I spilled out of the bar on a yeah. Friday night. It's, you know, it's nothing. But the thing that she did after she, as soon as she found out that I didn't want sex or I didn't want anything like that with her, and I was just purely doing it out of the goodness of my heart, so to save her from that depravity, as soon as that was really clear, she goes and she kind of, you know, we took her out for dinner and she found out we'll go into this orphanage the next day. She goes, you need to take me to the orphanage. I need to buy food for the kids. So 24 hours after she'd been, you know, we thought she was dead, and 16 hours after she was rescued and, you know, all of this stuff, I'm watching this girl walk around this orphanage handing out food and, you know, lollipops and chips and chocolates and, you know, fizzy pop drinks and all this kind of stuff. And she had the biggest grin on her face. And then she comes up to me and she said, oh, Matt, thank you so much for, you know, this food for these kids. They're so grateful. You know, they're so lucky that you're around. And she was, all she was thinking about was others and not herself. And it just, I sat back and went, man, if that was me, I'd want to go sit on the couch and watch Oprah for a couple of days. Like I'd be, you know, I'd be feeling, you know, pretty awful about myself. I'd want to do that. I could, there's no way I could be so joyous and so happy and so grateful in such a short amount, you know, such a short window. And it just went, I just got to do something.
Wow, that's an incredible story when you hear things like that. You know, you cannot imagine that things like that still happen. Huh? And with your business now, I read in the introduction, you're opening like these centers in developing countries and use them as community hubs. Can you explain a bit?
Yeah, so it took me a little while to set on the model and how to kind of come up with this. But what we eventually come up with, before Thailand, I had a sales training company. So I was training businesses how to sell over the internet, through the internet, and develop all these sales processes that could help increase their profits massively. And the frustration part that I always had with that is going, none of the salespeople would do the work that was needed. It was like everyone wanted to be strong, no one wanted to lift the weights. Everyone wanted to be skinny, no one wanted to be healthy. Everyone wanted to make sales, no one wanted to go make sales calls. So when I got back from Thailand, I went, well, if I can figure out how to automate and outsource all of these parts of the sales process that businesses don't do and salespeople just don't do, companies were paying me $100,000, $200,000 a year to train their sales teams. Surely they'd pay me $100,000, $200,000 a year to build a system and to build a team and to go do the work for them, because you know, they obviously are aware enough of a problem in their business that they're prepared to invest in the solution. And if my solution can be better than training, they'll pay for it. So I went about building all these systems and combining all these different tech stacks and systems and looking at how can we quality control and how can we get someone who English is their second, third, fourth language. And, you know, Western society has a massive bias against Filipinos, Thailands, Indians, and all this kind of outsourcing for, you know, the scams that we get, but how can we make it authentic and genuine? And then when I put all that together, it's gone, well, now I can run these systems from anywhere in the world. So now I choose to go build these centers where there's all these women that have no other choice other than go into a line that is going to end up with them, addicted to drugs, on prostitution, in this life where they've been exploited and trafficked and sold into slavery. I'm going to go put an employment hub right there and give them alternatives so that they now have a choice. They can come in here, they can make money, they can build a career, and most of them aren't interested in a career as such like we are in the West, but they, want to be able to provide for their family. They want to do that. And then through that center, we might have 50 or 60 jobs in there. So, there's those 60 people that are getting paychecked every week. That money goes into the community. But we start going a little bit further and start looking at, well, how can we run other support programs for people that can't work for us for whatever reason? How can we, run a daycare center so others can go get other jobs? How can we look at education, to set the next generation up? How can we provide meals to people that can't provide for themselves? How can we support local vendors, through some of our programs? So we'll buy produce in from local vendors. So we really look at the hub as a, it's a business. It has to make profit. Yeah,
right.
But we choose to make as little profit as we can to put that money back into the community, back into, the thing that is going to sort of change that community on a deeper level. So we started our first center in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And we've been building this model for a couple of years and really learning how to run an outsource center because I didn't know how to do it and how to sort of embed in the local culture and all that kind of stuff. And next year's the year we start to go open this up in Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia and really start to sort of take this to another level.
Right. But then, I imagine if you outsource to people over there, there is a kind of quality standard we expect. How do you manage that you keep on delivering the quality that is expected from the clients?
So we take a systems first, people second approach. Everything is system driven. Everything is templated. Everything is non-voice. So we don't have our agents picking up the phone and telemarketing. But we use technology and different tech stacks to replicate that. So if we needed to do telemarketing, for example, what we'll actually do is we will use voicemail drop technology. So we'll build a process that, and we do this low volume, high quality. So it's super targeted, super research. It's the total opposite of spam, which you can use the same technology to just spray and pray and spam millions of people. But we'll do the research into the targeted prospect. We go at a specific time of the day and we'll call 25 people because we know statistically you're going to get 1 to 3 pickups out of 25 if you're telemarketing. So we'll call 25 people from your cell number and ring it for half a second, not enough time for you to answer it, and then leave a voicemail message that you've called. So it'll be, hey, it's Yuri here. Give me a call back on 1234. And then those that are interested will actually pick up the phone and call you back. So you get all the benefit of making 25 dials without having to pick up the phone once unless someone's interested in you. And it's systems like that of how we get the quality. So there's quite a few sort of levels down that we can kind of take this. So that's the surface. We have a really structured quality control and management process that we measure everything. Activities, results, and we have a really sort of structured reporting system. We do, through that.
Which you can replicate for every center, of course, that you're starting.
Every client, every center, we measure all the activities that they do in a day for a client, the results of those activities. We benchmark them against our standard. We have a green light, red light, traffic light system. Green light, we're above KPI. Red light, we're below it. We have our leadership team has a meeting twice a week and we review every client's campaign. And we just, if it's all green lights, it's tick and flick. If there's red lights, we want to look at, where the KPIs behind the benchmark, and then we just brainstorm some suggestions. What can we do to improve it? And as long as we're seeing that kind of gap close, we tick and flick. But if that gap stays the same for more than 2 sessions, we then need to go do a deeper dive and do we need to adjust the strategy? Do we need to change some of the marketing assets? do we need to spend some time training the agent? And we can go about doing it from that. So, you know, the combination of all of that means that, you know, we've got clients that we work with, venture capital firms. We work with, you know, startups that are seeking Series A and Series B. We work with a hedge fund that is actually seeking million-dollar investments in their fund. We do business franchise sales. So we handle some really complex sales processes and some really high trust processes, and we can manage all of that through our system. So it's incredibly robust.
Yeah, it's impressive, but I imagine, yeah, those systems, you have them in place, now they are working for you. You have like this structure. You also are measuring everything. I think that's very important. I had a business analytics company in the past, and sales and all this stuff, and people, we are all the time measuring to improve, of course, because you don't measure anything, you don't know what to do or to decide based on.
If you're not measuring it, you can't manage it. If you can't manage it, you don't know what you're doing.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So because of all of that, things become a bit more predictable, you know, because you've seen that certain things are working and on a good track.
And I said, it's just that consistent, you know, like I say to everyone all the time, going, we're going to be behind the KPIs 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to happen. That's just life. But as long as we're asking the questions consistently, and we're making small little changes, and it's not big changes. Like if you're behind a KPI, it's like going, okay, let's just tweak a couple of words in the message, or let's look at the time of the day that we're reaching out to them, or let's look at the targeting and get a little bit more specific on the profile. Like it's not a big shift, but we need to be asking those questions constantly and making those little course corrections. And you know, if we do that, it's the same as a plane traveling from Brisbane to Belgium. It's going to be off course 90% of the time, but because it's constantly course correcting, it always lands exactly where it wants to go. Yeah. You know, that's what I find in, you know, businesses that do really well from a business development and sales, you know, process versus struggle. That is the one thing, that kind of the one difference is, one is constantly monitoring and course correcting.
Mm-hmm.
One is not. And, yeah, you know, it's a small discipline, but it makes a massive difference at the end of the month.
Exactly. I like your comparison with the plane. That's also comparison that I'm using when I build dashboards for clients, and what's the frequency of updating them. If you do it once a month, you're behind the facts. But if you do it, you know, it depends, of course, on the business itself, and the length of the sales processes. But yeah, that's a really good comparison. You said, okay, one thing that can make a difference is this measuring. Are there other kind of mistakes that you see people doing when they are managing sales?
Oh, look, you know, measuring is important, but the biggest mistake is relying on people first, profit system second. You know,
right.
Most businesses, and again, I work with a lot of startups, a lot of founders. Most of the founders are tech-based, so they're not salespeople. They are great at building the widget or that, but the rest of the stuff they have no idea about. So they go, oh, I'm going to bring a salesperson on board. And they'll hire Johnny salesperson and sitting there and go, right, now go and sell. And mm-hmm. one of two things happens with Johnny. Johnny's either really good and makes them a lot of money, or Johnny really terrible and costs them a lot of money. Now, both ways actually cause a problem. If Johnny's really good, all of a sudden, who has the balance of power in that company? Johnny does, because if Johnny leaves, money goes with him.
Right.
And if Johnny doesn't succeed, it costs them money. So when you rely on people, you're at risk and you're relying on their skill and their thing. When you build a system and then you hire Johnny salesperson, you say, Johnny salesperson, you're going to do this, and you're going to, you know, build a house by putting the foundation down, putting the framing up, putting the walls up, build the inside light. This is the process. This is how we're going to measure you. This is your KPIs. And if you hit all these KPIs, this is your bonus and your commission that you're going to get. Johnny either follows the process or he doesn't. Now, if he follows the process, it's either going to deliver the results or it doesn't. But if it doesn't, then you can look at, is it a training issue? Do we need to spend some time with Johnny to give him some more skills and that? Or is it a system issue? Are we missing some tools and some support that's not, you know, not making him successful? Or is our strategy wrong? Are we looking at the wrong target, the wrong process? Have we got that? So it allows you to be far more scientific in how can we diagnose a problem, how can we fix a problem, But then when you have it working, it makes it so much easier to scale because now you're not relying on finding Johnny 2.0.
Yeah.
You just need to bring someone else and say, if you follow this system, this is what you're going to get. Go, and then you can scale a lot faster because you're bringing people into a system and you effectively make it like a sausage factory. In comes the raw material, mm-hmm. follow the process, out comes a consistent product. And, you know, very few businesses take that approach to sales and take that discipline to doing it, which is why they always hit ceilings and they have the inconsistent results.
Yeah. You know, when you are telling, I don't know if you're a sports fan, but I was thinking about the soccer team, you know, when you have like a tactic, you have a system, how you play, and you get one player injured and you have another player that knows the system. So you can bring him in the team and actually yep. there's not so much impact. But if, you know, you just rely on people, as you said, and you put them, then I don't think that will work.
You know, that's the Aussie rules is my sport. You can see the jersey behind me of my team, which those that know will either love it or hate it. Those that don't know, come and watch Aussie Rules. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's soldier in, soldier out.
Right.
You know, you have a team, you have roles in the team. Someone goes down, you get another soldier in to do that role. Mm-hmm. And the abilities impact. When you're personnel driven, you know, you're at risk. You know, and it's they have a good day, you have a win. They have a bad day, you have a loss.
Yeah.
No one likes that.
No. Or do you notice a difference? Is it easier or harder today to manage sales growth than, for instance, comparing to 10 years ago? Do you see that a difference?
It's certainly different. And the majority of companies have used, and there's a big trend I've witnessed over the last, say, 10 or 15 years with sales, is we're using technology to replace interaction. You know, mm-hmm. so sales as a whole is heading more towards an order-taking process rather than a sales process. We want to wait for people to buy. And that's the way most companies, a lot of companies want to kind of approach it of going, well, we're worried about coming across as salesy. We're worried about coming across as spammy. We don't want to do this. So we're using technology to kind of just wait for people to buy and be kind of passive and, you know, like a spectator in the sport. So those that kind of understand that, you know, sales is a contact sport and you've got to actually, you know, suit up and play the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you can play it right, those that do that, it is a lot easier because the competition is just sleeping at the moment and they're not, you know, they're not doing it or they're not doing it well, you know, from there. So if you can understand, you know, right, I'm going to suit up, I'm going to get in the game and understand the role that you need to play and the rules of the game, it's a heck of a lot easier than it was 10 years ago because the standard of competition is a lot less than what it was 10 years ago because most people are just now lazy.
Okay. Yeah, people think that it falls out of the sky if everything happens for them and they don't want to make so much effort. Like you see all these people that think that they will earn money through social media and it will happen like that. They don't need to do anything. Oh. And I see this
a lot. One of the things that you see it on social media all the time is how to make money without coming across salesy, how to do this without coming across salesy. So, you know, so many people have this bias because that's been just ingrained into them. Don't mm-hmm. come across salesy. So the second they do anything remotely like a sales, like pick up a call to someone that they don't know and start a conversation, they're more worried about what they think that other person might think about them, so they don't do it. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. just pick up the damn phone.
Right.
You know, and when they answer, don't be a douchebag. You know, have a conversation with them. Like, don't start by saying, you know, hi, Yuri, I'm here to sell you product ABC.
Exactly.
Saying, hey, Yuri, I saw you're in business. I'm in business. Have you got 2 minutes for a chat? Yes, I do. Great. Now, look, I help businesses with a couple of problems. Do you mind if I ask you a question? Yes, great. You know, could your business increase its revenue by 20% if you improved the sales? Oh, yes, it would. Hey, look, it sounds like something there. How about I buy you a coffee or a virtual coffee and let's have a chat and see if we can, you know, mm-hmm. give you some ideas that are going to help that. People are craving that. They need that. There's so many businesses that are struggling in silence that are looking online for solutions and everyone's too damn scared to sell it to them.
Right.
You know, those that can get out of their way and follow the process and do it properly, the opportunities are endless, especially with all the uncertainty we're heading into at the moment.
Right.
You know, especially with how much harder it's going to get business. It's, you know, you go back and look at every downturn in history, and there's been massive companies that have failed to adapt and have fallen by the wayside. There's been minnow companies that have grown into the stratosphere in a very short amount of time, and there's a heap of small, medium businesses that have taken massive leaps forward from that. And the difference between those that fall into insignificance and those that grow are those that are willing to get out there and work twice as hard for half the amount of money to get out there to make things happen rather than sitting back waiting for things to happen.
Right. Say, for people who are inspired by you, Matt, and who want to have a real conversation with you, what would be the best way to connect with you? We talked about social media. Is there a social media channel?
Two places to find me. The best place is LinkedIn. If you just search up Matthew spelled with one T, Boyle, and I'm sure you'll include the link somewhere in here. Best way to do that is to connect through there. I'm active on LinkedIn on there all the time. I check it regularly and respond to messages through that. Otherwise than that, you can jump on my website and have a look at www.online2offline.com.au.
Right. Of course, we will include them in the show notes. So if people are listening or are watching the podcast, you can find them there. It was so great to have you, Matt, with, I guess, some ideas, some inspiration, or maybe some action points for people that are listening to you to think about their sales or maybe something else. Thank you very much.
My pleasure of having me. It was fun.
It was fun, Matt. Always fun on the podcast. I really love doing podcasting. So people, if you're listening to this podcast and you like it, be sure to share it with your friends, with your followers. That would really make me happy if you do that, because of course, that's why I'm doing this. I have impact, as you said too, Matt. Having an impact with my podcast is at this moment the most important for me. So feel free to share it. And also, if you like it, I would love to see you again for the next podcast episode. Bye.